a group of guys do their best to help amateurs who are curious get their questions answered. You want to know how your transmission line can work better, how your antenna can work better, which transmitters should you buy, how do you fix them, who makes a good receiver, what kind of propagation, 26 or so, maybe 27 different kinds of AM radio. And the one you're listening to right now is a 2-meter FM by way of a repeater. And before you give up this extremely educational hobby, if you're disappointed with it, make sure you try one of the other 26 kinds. The curious people gather here every Sunday for the last 32 and a fraction years, going on 33 years, and this is going to be TechNet number 1,536 of the series that began in September of 1982. I'm kind of amazed that it has lasted this long. Never expected it to last this long. We thought we'd be on the air for a few weeks or a few months, answer people's questions and go away. Turns out that radio is a bit more complicated than first meets the eye. The schools do a mediocre job of teaching wireless technology. The books do a slightly better job, but there's an awful lot to be learned. And so the group of people who meet here try to teach each other. Let me drop it. So our loose schedule, our loosely held schedule, is that for the first hour we take general questions and try to give answers. That's followed by John, KC2WGB, who gives us the submittals from the mailbag, people who don't yet have their ham license or the right equipment so they can talk to us directly. And they send him questions by way of email, snail mail, and so on. That's followed by Paul, WS2N, who has been tracking what National Aeronautics and Space Administration has been doing for the last billion years. And so he's quite expert on that one, and he'll tell us what the latest is. After that, we sometimes go into deeper subjects, although quite often the space report or something Eric is telling us, KE2EJ, who is our local broadcast engineer for Channel 13 and Channel 21 PBS television. Quite often people get very excited about what television is really doing right now, broadcast television, what is it likely to become. And so the high definition and high density and whatever, we're eventually going to have television screens that have the resolution of a 35-millimeter slide. Let me drop. Along with three-dimensional television, and maybe someday we'll even have smell-o-vision. In other words, you'll have the complete experience of almost being there by way of your broadcast television. A person signs into the technical net because he does have a question or a comment to give that group of people, your call letters, your name, followed by the word yes, which means you do have a question or comment. Need not sign in just because you're listening. After 35 years, we believe somebody is listening. And by way of Echo Link and IRLP, there are people who, outside of the area, can get in, even though they're in another state and in another country. Let me drop. And in the past, people have had trouble signing in by way of Echo Link or IRLP because we sometimes don't leave enough pause between our transmissions to listen to the four beeps and maybe a second or two more so the whole system can reset. By way of John, KC2WGB, monitoring the Echo Link website, we now know if somebody is trying to get through, and John informs us, K2UPS, for instance, is trying to say something to us, so give a little extra pause and let Rich come through. That example, for instance, has happened on a number of occasions. Okay, let me take the check-ins right now. If you've got a question or a comment, give me a call letters and name. K2RAW listening.
N2EO, question and comment, N2EO.
N2 Mike Bravo with a question.
Okay, so far I've heard Freddie, Rich, Barry, Joe, I thought it was a KC2,
Echo, Kilo Charlie 2, Sierra Hotel Oscar. John in Mount Laurel.
Very fine, John. Okay. And Joe. And one last call. I'm amazed that not many people have returned from Dayton. I expect we'd have a light night tonight. One last call. Anyone else to sign in? Because you do have a question or a comment. Give me a call that has a name right now. K2RIW.
Mr. Lent, Paul, with a space report. Good evening, Hal. John, Dick.
Very fine, Paul. Looking forward to that. Okay, the first guy that signed in was Freddy, KB2VBN. Quite often we go back to Freddy, and he's already left us. Let's see if he's still there. KB2VBN, K2RIW. Go ahead, Freddy.
Yes, I wanted a question about the Equilink. I heard some guys talking about Nevada on his frequency there. He told me it's a good thing to have. I went on the website to try to find out how to do the Equilink, and it gave me no information at all. So I want to know how do I get on Equilink. I want to talk to some people from Alaska and places like that.
Okay, good question, Freddie. Now, the man who monitors Echolink for us is John KC2WGB. So, you could say he is on Echolink, and he's going to tell us roughly what you got to do to become authorized, to get the authority to use it, to get recognized. So, John KC2WGB, K2RIW.
KC2WGB. Good evening, Dick, everyone on the net, and Freddy. Okay, go to www.echolink.com. Very simple. You go on there, they give you all of the instructions on how to load that into your computer. You have to be approved. You either give them a credit card or some way of checking out who you are and that you're authorized and that you have a call sign. Once that's all proven, which is a very simple thing to do, they give you four or five different ways to become active immediately. So it would take you more than an hour to be on if everything goes well. It's that simple. KC2WGB. Back to you, Dick.
So let me run that by one more time. As soon as you gave them a credit card or some other kind of positive identification and you downloaded the right information, the right program into your computer, are you saying that within minutes you were then able to do Echolink? And I'm guessing now, by some means, you find out the name, the numbers of the nodes. In other words, there's a particular Echolink node number, for instance, for a particular repeater in London, and a particular repeater in Ohio, and Nevada, and a particular repeater on Long Island. That website also gives you that information of those node numbers, John. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
KC2WGB, what will happen when you are authorized and loaded? You have an icon that will show up on your desktop. Double click on that icon. It takes you right into Echolink. There's no nodes to file. There's nothing. And as soon as you go on, you'll see everybody that's on Echolink. There'll be a long list. Like right now, there's like five people on Echolink right now. And you can send them a message. You can just type in a message and you use their call sign. You type it in, and they'll see it come up on their screen, and you can communicate that way. It's very simple.
Okay, of the five people that are signed into Echolink right now, getting to each one of those, you've just given us a hint as to do that, how to do that. But Freddie's original question is what? Let's assume now he's got a friend living in Nevada. He knows of a particular repeater in Nevada that's within range of a repeater. He's got a friend in Nevada that's within range of a particular repeater. How does he send a message to that particular repeater in Nevada? I think it's got a particular node number, and so by some means, Freddie has to select that number in order to say, hello, Nevada, I'm here in New York, and I'm now listening. My friend, are you there? How do you find out that number, and how do you initiate that process, John? KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Dick, I don't think it's possible to do that on Echolink. They have to be on. So it would be a prearranged time, like 8 o'clock, and that they would come on, you would come on, you'd be able to communicate with them. What you're talking about is the IRLP function. I don't know much about that. That you can do on IRLP, from what I understand.
Yeah, I've not used either one of these. I'm pretty ignorant of them. K-H-U-Y-H-Y, Steve, sometimes in the morning, while he's on the 450 machine of this, of Limark, he will do something from his automobile such that the link to the repeater in London becomes active, and then he sends out the call letters of the G5 friend of his in London, and if the G5 friend happens to be listening to his local repeater, he hears his call letters, he keys his handy-talkie, and then so that friend in London is now talking to Steve as he's driving to work in his automobile. I think you're saying that that's not Echolink, that's IRLP. Over to you, John, K2LAW.
Echolink.
Okay, yeah. Barry, it sounds to me like you've used it. Give us a few words on this, Barry. How would Freddie go about doing that if he wanted to talk to his friend in London and or his friend in Nevada? In two moon bounds, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Okay. If his friend is already connected to his local repeater there, and the local repeater has Echolink, I assume it does, then when he brings up Echolink on his computer locally here, you'll see every repeater that's on Echolink, every Echolink connection will come up. He goes down the list in alphabetical order until he gets to that repeater by its call letters, and he connects to it. If he connects to it, every time he talks, it's just like being on that repeater, and his friend will hear him.
Okay, you used a word. He connects to it. In other words, he goes down the list, he finds out that this particular repeater in London is Echolink enabled, and he wants to now establish a link between his automobile and that repeater, so that he can then call his friend over that repeater. He connects to it. What does he physically do to connect to that repeater? Over to Barry, K2LAW, and wait for the four beeps.
Okay. When he sees the list on his computer, because he'll get a list of every repeater that's available on Echolink, he takes his mouse, left button, puts it right on the call letters of that repeater, and clicks it with the mouse. And that gives him the ability to sign into that repeater. Once he's signed into the repeater, everything he says can be heard, because he's actually, you have a green button, I think, if I get it right, he pushes that button to transmit on that repeater. Unless the repeater is broadcasting, then he can't do it, because when the repeater is sending, you can't access. You've got to wait until they stop talking. And then the button turns, I think, orange or something. One of the buttons, a left-hand button. You push that button, as long as the repeater, nobody's talking, then you're in that repeater. You're talking on the repeater until you stop, and then you turn it back to listen just by unclicking that same button.
Very well done, Barry. Now, you've used Echolink for roughly how long? And tell us some of the best DX you've done with Echolink. I mean, have you talked to somebody in London? Have you talked to somebody in Australia? How long have you used it? And what exciting things have you done with it so far, Barry? N2MB, K2LAW.
Okay, well, Echolink is like a band opening all the time. Kind of like a telephone call, really. I have a thing about Australia, because I've worked them a few times on 2 meters. So I always look for people that I know there, a couple of hams I know there that I've worked on 2 meters off the moon. And I see their call letters coming up, and I click on them, and we talk. So I guess Australia's a pretty easy one, and you don't have to wait for a band opening. And, of course, my son lives in Clemson, South Carolina. And, by the way, I can't talk to him on Echolink
lately because they did something weird to it. I hope that this fellow here who's trying to use it doesn't run into that problem. They only will allow links and something else at this time. I'm going to send them an email and tell them not to do that, and they'll probably undo it. But they don't want people just connecting. They only want to go from link to link or something like that. And that's just their personal thing. You don't get that very often.
Todd, good information. I thank you, Barry. So, Freddie, I wonder if this information helps, and if you got any further questions as to what to do next. Looks like signing up to, going to that website and signing up is the first step. KB2VBN, the UHF, VHF voice of, I think, Far Rockaway, K2RIW. You got it, Freddie.
Just want to let Freddie know, after you sign up, it's going to take like a week or two for them to let you into Echolink. It used to be instantaneous, but they've had problems, and because of that, now they check you out very carefully, make sure you're really a ham, all that stuff. If everything is cool, they'll let you know that you're on.
Oh, we know that Freddie is really a ham, so he's got to be enabled. So I wonder if you have any further questions, Freddie. KB2VBN. You got it. Wait for the four beeps. K2RAW in the TechNet.
Barry, when I press the green button on my computer, my laptop, can they hear me if I talk to the laptop?
The green button is to connect to that local repeater. Once it's connected, there's another button all the way over to the left. I guess it's called a transmit button or something. And once you push that button, yes, he will hear you right away on his computer, instantaneously.
I've got a question first, and then I'm going to turn it over to John for his comment. Is Freddie talking into a audio system connected to his computer, or is he talking into the local repeater? Because when Steve does this, K-H-Y-H-Y, from his automobile, and from his automobile he does something by which he can echo link, I think it's echo link, to his buddy in London. So does the audio on Freddie's side, so to speak, does it come from his handy-talkie into a local repeater, or does it come from a microphone into his computer? And can he switch from one to the other? Over to you, Barry. N2MB, K2LAW, wait for the four beeps.
Okay, the answer to that question is yes and yes. You can do it both ways. You can connect to a local repeater, or you can do it the other way, and go through the internet to the local repeater in that guy's town. And lately, people are using cell phones and iPads and all kinds of things to get on Echolink. So I don't know whether he's making a phone call or if he's connecting through Echolink with his iPad. You can do it any way you want now. It's very flexible.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Whenever we talk to Rich, K2UPS, as he's driving his UPS truck across to Ohio and Indiana and Pennsylvania and Kentucky, I believe he's going through his cell phone. By some means with his cell phone, he's talking back to us with Echolink. Let's see what John wants to add to this. KC2WGB, K2LAW, you got it, John.
WB2GXM.
Okay, very good. Freddie, when you're using your computer, if it has a microphone attached to the computer, when you press the space bar, just press it once, you'll see the transmit light come on in the lower right-hand corner. You speak, you'll see the graphic of the voice in the little bar. And then when you're done, you hit the space bar again, you'll see the transmit light go out. That's basically how it's used here. There's many ways you can do it, but that's just the way I operate, and it works fine. KC2WGB, back to you, Dick.
Before we send it back to Freddie, we had a comment from, I think it's WB2GXM. Sounds like Golf X-Ray Mike, but I might not have it correct. Mr. GXM, question mark. Start off with your name and correct me on the call letters. K2RAW, give us your comment, sir.
Dick, this is Rich, WB2GXM, Golf X-Ray Mike. Just a comment about sending authorization. I have a lot of trouble sending on my credit card or my social security number or anything. I don't like to do that. But if you have access to the FCC database, you should download a copy of your official license. Send that to Echo Link, and that is perfectly acceptable.
Good information, Rich. Sounds like that can speed up the process. You're now using the database of the Federal Communications Commission, and that's got to be accepted because that's got your name, your address, and so on. Let's see if Freddie's got any further questions. Glad you asked about this one, Freddie. KB2VBN, K2RIW in the deck end.
So this is KB2VBN. Yeah, I'm not too good at computers, Dan. I'm from the old school. I was born in 1958. Yeah, I never put a microphone on my laptop computer. How much does the microphone cost, and where do you put it in?
Almost all computers today have a built-in mic.
You buy a $5 mic, and you plug it right into the audio card for any DC-2 WGB.
So can you walk into Staples, for instance, and buy the microphone that will be compatible with this computer? Over to you, John. And roughly how many dollars would that be?
Well, he can get them on eBay. That's no problem. They're about $5. You could buy a better one for maybe 10. But even the cheap ones work, and it plugs right into the sound card, and it's accepted and does very well.
Out of curiosity, John, do some people do that with a headset where there's a microphone and earphones all combined connected to the computer? Could it be done that way? Over to you, John.
Yes, Dick. I use my Dragon headset that I got with my Dragon software, and it has a boom mic on a little headset. Works fine.
I wonder if you've done Echo Link, Rich. Is that what you're about to tell us? N2EO, K2LAW.
I have, but very, very little. But I can tell you this, they also make microphones that plug into the USB port.
Okay, let's see if Barry or John have any further comments on the microphone that plugs into the USB port. I'm kind of foolish here. I'm not sure what other ports on the computer are capable of taking the microphone. Why don't you take that one, Barry? And how did you make the connection to your particular computer? And how modern is your computer? N2 Moonbounce, K2LIW.
Okay. I've got old ones and new ones. And they all have a USB port, and that's the only thing I ever use is a mic and headset that plugs into one plug in the USB port. I find that very good. For some reason, I get more volume out of the headset, and the mic works better. And I love to do it that way because these computers that have the built-in microphones tend to pick up a ton of room noise. And Richie knows that because I was talking to him for a while when I was traveling, and I didn't bring my headset and USB microphone with me. So I was forced to use the microphone and see the computer, and it was terrible. As soon as I was able to get home, plug my headset in with the USB mic, world of difference.
Action, Dick.
Yeah, I've got a quick question for Barry on this one, then I'm going to turn it over to John. Barry, in the beginning, when people were starting to use Echo Link, I do remember hearing people coming on with extremely low audio, extremely large, loud audio, and so on. Under-modulation, over-modulation, sometimes poor quality. Is there a testing procedure within the Echo Link process by which you can find out, in other words, is there a signal strength meter, so to speak, so you can set the proper volume? And by the way, where is that volume control? I'm guessing that somewhere in the program there is a square you can click on, which is maybe a slider that will increase or decrease the volume to your microphone and or your headset. N2 Moonbounce, K2LAW.
One of the connections on Echo Link, aside from the person you're trying to connect to, perhaps something called echo test. Just go down the list until you get to echo test, connect to echo link that way, and then you can do anything you want. Your computer usually has, they have like slide bars, you know, come up on the screen. You go to the your computer's audio, I guess microphone, whatever you call it. It says microphone, headset, you know, that thing. And then you'll get menus. And then you go through that and set your volume receive and volume transmit, the whole bit. And you know you got it right because you can hear yourself come back on echo test. It records your audio and plays it back so you know exactly how you sound.
That sounds awfully good. Out of curiosity, is there also an equalizer there? If I wanted to boost my highs and cut my lows or vice versa, does that that function you just described give me an equalizer function? Or do I have to make sure I start off with a medium good quality microphone to begin with? Back to you, Barry, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Hey, cheers, John.
Okay, well, the strange thing about this answer is sometimes yes and sometimes no. I don't understand why, but if I use my USB headset on the computer, I get all those controls. If I use the microphone that's built into the computer, I only get half of the controls. I haven't a clue why, but it evidently has something to do with the program you're using and the particular computer you're using. And I think Eric wanted to say something. N2MB.
Yeah, we've got two people backed up right now, John and Eric in that order. John wanted to make a comment from earlier. KC2WGB, K2RIW, go ahead, John.
KC2WGB, yes, Dick, I just want to make a correction. Somebody just corrected me. It's www.echolink.org, not .com, .org, just for Freddie, so he doesn't get frustrated trying to get there. That's it. Back to you, Dick, KC2WGB.
Thank you, John. KE2EJ, you're going to wait for the four beeps, so even though I didn't, our broadcast engineer, tell us anything you want about all this jazz. Eric, you got it.
K2WPK2EJ, the one thing I wanted to say in relation to what Barry said, even though there's a echo reflector which you can hear yourself back, some people get caught in a really bad predicament because what happens is that you have a volume control for the output on your computer and you have a volume control for the input on your computer. Those that don't bother to set the output up to some standard first before they perform that test will think that they're getting wonderful results and in actuality will be low in level or high in level depending upon how they had the output of the computer set. And as far as the differences between the computers vary, they've pretty much worked on three different sets of sound generators, and they're all very, very similar. So unless you happen to be using a professional audio interface, the differences are not that great. So the computers really don't have that much to do with it. It's how you set it up for the most part. And some, Dick, by the way, some sound controls on some computers have equalizers and others don't, so they're relying on the software that runs the sound card in the computer, and that's what they're doing. They're using APIs that they send your stream here and we take care of the rest, so the volume and equalization is outside of the program.
Okay, we're getting smarter. I thank you, Eric. Now, you can fall into the trap of setting the volume control on going out of your computer to high or low, and the volume control coming back into your computer to high or low. Therefore, what you hear in your earphones may sound right, but the people who you talk to by Echo Link may think you're not right. Somewhere in one of those programs, is there a standard level S meter? I mean, you know what you broadcast engineers are. You've got that meter with a dancing needle, and you make sure you go up through the top of the green zone, but don't go into the red zone. Is there such a meter that allows you to set the microphone audio volume? KE2EJ, K2LAW.
K2LAW, K2EJ. Yeah, there is a volume indicator when you're speaking, and also when it comes back. When you get things right, it looks like there's good video meter that's doing it accurately. But what I'm talking about is some people will have the output set too low, therefore you have to set the input too high. But there is actually a standard reference. It's been a while since I've done it. There's a file that you play that's the reference to play through the program. There's a, I think there's also a, there is a, now I'm not positive because I haven't done it in a year now, but there is a place you can go on EchoLink that gives you a reference. When I look at it again, I'll tell you exactly.
Well done, Eric. Thank you. Hey, Freddie, you've asked one hell of a question. We're getting a lot of information out of this one tonight. And what if you got any further questions, Eric? I mean, Freddie. KB2VBN. K2LIW on the TechNet.
I got a lot of information there. Thanks for the information, fellas. Yeah, I'm 56 years old. And computers are definitely ain't my thing there. Back to the net.
Good old Freddy is bragging about his age. You go to QSZ.com, and he's one of those guys that lets them tell the truth. Says he was born in 1958, and you have the option of erasing that if you want to keep your birth year secret. And Freddy is he's up front, and he's letting us know. Very good, Freddy. Ed, with any further questions on EchoLink? Because I'm guessing so far only a small percentage of the amateurs have used it, but it looks to me like each of those that have used it are awfully happy with it. And with any further questions on EchoLink, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
One more comment, Dick.
Okay. Stand by. Let's see. Does anybody have a question? Give me your call letters right now. Okay, looks like we've satisfied the questions. John, give us your comment.
Well, the things Eric was pointing out are available in the tools frame. You go up and click on tools, and it'll open up a whole bunch of things you can do with it. As you noticed, that one time when we were talking to a gentleman, we had him lock in the 300 hertz lockout where he would lose the lows because he was very bassy, and those are the things you can do in EchoLink right on that tools menu. So it's a good program and it works rather well. Takes a little time to adjust it, but I'm sure he'll have fun. Back to you, Dick. KC2WGB.
Okay, he just reminded me already. Now I can tell you more specifically. The EchoLink program, actually what it does is calls up the audio player program, you know, the volume control. It's actually not within the EchoLink. It calls it up and it opens it as a child window. So if you've got the facilities in your computer to control the bass or do the roll off and that kind of stuff, you've got the buttons for it. So EchoLink will call it. And the reference tone is also there in the tool menu.
Z?
Blank, blank, blank. IZ is what it sounded like. That's all we heard. Give us your full call letters and name, and proceed with your question or comment, sir. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Good evening, Dick. It's KB2KUZ. My name is Alex, and the question is, will EchoLink run on a Mac?
Do we know?
Yes.
Yeah, let me get that answered by Eric first, Barry second, and Rich third. Go ahead, Eric. KE2EJ, KE2LAW.
Do a Google search for Echo Mac. Echo Mac, and it'll take you to the right place. You download it. You've got it on a Mac. That is an Intel-based Mac. You know, OS9 is, you know, anything less than 10.2, it won't run on.
Good information. Let's see what Barry's got to say about that. Into Moon Bounce, K2RIW. Go ahead, Barry.
Okay, actually, Eric just answered the question beautifully, so disregard this guy. You got it right, Eric. I just wanted to jump in there and let him know that it was possible. Eric explained how it was possible. It was a little better. Into MP.
So that Eric took the wind out of your sail. Let's see what Rich has got to say on this. N2EO, K2LAW. And how often have you used EchoLink, Rich? Go ahead.
Used it a lot, but yes, what Eric and Barry said. I'm a Mac. I use a program called Echo Mac. It does what EchoLink does. It's 100% compatible. There's also another way. I have a utility unrelated to EchoLink called Parallels. I think it's about $79. Wired over the internet and download Parallels. They give you a trial period. What it allows you to do is to run Microsoft on a Mac. If you run Parallels, download Windows into Parallels, then you load EchoLink or anything else. You have to take it to me.
It also runs very good on Linux.
Let me throw one more thing into the pot here. If you're Parallels, that means you can have a Windows desktop and a Mac desktop simultaneously. But Parallels is a VM, it's a virtual machine. It's got its problems. If you want to run the Windows version of EchoLink on Parallels, you get all sorts of troubles that you're not aware of that actually occur. My personal choice, I use Bootcamp. But depending upon the age of your Mac and what type of Mac it is, you're either going to be able to put Windows XP or Windows 7, a 32-bit version or a 64-bit version, and as a lot of folks know, with Windows 7, 64-bit, well, 32-bit, 16-bit stuff just done there. So there's a caveat to that. Parallels is one way. You still have to buy the license for the Microsoft that you put on. $79 gets you the Parallels. You still got to spend what you got to spend for a legitimate legal copy of Windows. So, but Echo Mac, most people are not aware that Jonathan Taylor, who is the creator of EchoLink and the program, originally wrote it, because he actually had the compiler on his Mac. He originally wrote it for his Mac, and got a compiler that compiled Windows on his Mac to make the Windows version. So, written by the same guy, so it's not like anything different.
Okay, I thank you guys. Let's see if Alex, who asked that last question about Mac, has got any further questions. And it looks like your Mac is about to get on EchoLink. It looks to me like at least one more person in Kew Gardens is going to be EchoLinking. KB2KUZ, K2RIW. Go ahead, Alex.
Thank you, Dick, and thanks to all who responded. Very good information. I'll look into all of those good things. K2RIW, KB2KUZ, back to you. Thank you.
So it was Freddie who asked this very, very exciting question tonight. And Freddie, as you go through the learning curve, and Alex, as you go through the learning curve, please come back and tell us what you discovered, what glitches you ran into. I mean, almost nothing works perfectly the first time. But you guys have got perseverance, and you're going to make it go, I can tell. Come back and let us know about it. Next person on our list was Rich, N2EO. What would you like to talk about now? I'll talk about anything about it except installing antennas. Rich, what would you like to talk about? N2EO, K2RIW.
Yes, I do want to talk about antennas, and then I got an interesting comment to the net, because I recently got into a mode called D-Star, so I'd like to give a little, not a talk, but a brief synopsis on D-Star. Dick, I'm wondering what your opinion is of a off-center fed dipole called a Wyndham. I may want to put one up for my HF radio prior to getting something more substantial, because money's been flowing out of here for construction in the home like water. And also, I wonder if there are any volunteers out there now that would help me string up a Wyndham. I was going to build it, but I see it's actually cheaper to buy one from MFJ and there are a few other dealers that make them cheaper, the Fedwood ladder line to a tuner. And anyway, I hope I can get some people over here to help me string it up. I think most people know He's not everybody. I'm stuck in a wheelchair. I had a leg amputated about a year and a half, a little over a year ago. So I certainly can't do it for myself. If I get some help from the Lyme Board, if I call them, or I coin the phrase, the Lymarkians, nice people, I'd like to get some help. Over to you, Dick, and then I want to comment on these thoughts.
Of the dipole-like antennas that cover multiple bands simultaneously, Wyndham is one of them, G5RV, Luvarney's antenna is another one, and a fan dipole is another one. And some people will go to the antenna book and find a trap dipole-like structure that with traps in the right places, it works on multiple bands, multiple half bands all at once. Which one is the better one? It's a little bit like asking a person, would I be happier if I marry a blonde, a brunette, or a redhead? There's a lot more variables involved in many cases. Now, of you guys who have put up Wyndhams, G5RVs, or fan dipoles, if you've got a suggestion for Rich as to which is going to give him the least amount of grief, my understanding is he's got a medium-sized piece of property. He does have some trees nearby which can act as support, and the chimney of the house can act as a support. So does anybody have anything against a Wyndham, which is not his current thinking? Give me your call letters right now if you've got an opinion. K2LAW in the TechNet. Looks like nobody's got any strong adverse opinions on either of those three, or strong pro opinions. So this looks like 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. With the right kind of an antenna tuner and/or balancing device, a simple dipole can be used on a lot of frequencies. As you found out when you were living in Whitestone, as long as you were feeding it with open wire line, you can feed a dipole at the wrong frequency and get pretty good response. If you were feeding with coax, an 80-meter dipole, for instance, fed on 40 meters with coax, because the Viswire is extremely high, and I'll explain that one. An 80-meter dipole is going to be around 70 ohms on 80 meters. You feed it on 40 meters, and you're looking at something like 2,000 ohms. That's a 50-to-1 standing wave ratio. And even if your antenna tuner's got enough range, you're going to get a lot of loss in the coax. Although, because open wire line is so low in loss, you can get away with that. And so with open wire line, an 80-meter dipole can be fed on 40 meters, for instance. So there's ways around these problems. So I'm not sure that we've got a strong feeling as to what's the best way to go in your particular case, Rich. N2EO, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. I don't want to go with a trap dipole because I've got one neighbor that's far away and the other neighbor's close to me. Very friendly guy, but I don't want to take advantage. I'd like to string up just a single wire antenna, a Wyndham, and I'm hoping I can get some help. It'll probably take two guys, no more than that, in the club to help me to string it up. Over.
Almost all of these antennas, Rich, are only a piece of wire in the air. We amateurs walk around looking for that wire in the air because we want to know which ham location, which QTH has got the antennas. Most human beings do not see wire. So whether you've got 1, 3, or 15 wires up there, they probably don't see it. Obvious by the fact that as you drive up and down every one of our residential streets, with rare exception, every 150 feet you've got a utility pole with all kinds of wires in the air. And we don't see them anymore. When somebody wants to install a cell phone base station in a particular town, everybody gets up in arms because it's a new installation and something they think is going to be an eyesore. And yet all of those phone poles and all that wiring, they don't see it. So as you can tell, it's a little bit crazy along those lines. So I don't think you're going to have trouble putting wire in the air. That's my first impression. However, as long as you keep a good talking relationship with a neighbor, and at the first sign that they see something that they think is unhappy, and they start discussing it with you, and you continue to have a friendly conversation, boy, an awful lot of potential problems downrange can be negated right in the beginning if you keep a friendly relationship. Let me drop it. The last thing you want to do is a friend of mine in Woodbury did 10 years ago. Is he told his neighbors that I've got a Federal Communications Commission license. I'm allowed to do this. You don't have any power to stop me. Therefore, I'm going to do it. You say words like that in an affluent community made up of people that are doctors and lawyers. You tell them they have no power over what you're doing. Boy, you just declared war. And boy, war was declared, and a lot of grief followed. So you've got to be friendly with the neighbors. Even though you think you're the king of your castle, you own your land, and no one next door should be able to make comments on that. Make believe they are allowed to make comments. Stay friendly, stay humble, if you know what I mean. And if they're unhappy with something, be willing to discuss it. Be willing to discuss variations and so on. If they want you to paint it blue so that it matches their house, certainly consider doing it. Those are some of my suggestions, Rich. Make sure you stay friendly with that neighbor. N2EO, K2LIW, the TechNet.
Okay, Dick. Well, I'm
going to
believe I'll be friendly with him. His name is Keith. He works at a hospital in an operating room as an OR technician, so he's well versed in my problems. In fact, he came over here this afternoon. He offered to and mowed my lawn, which is something I never asked him to do. But anyway, I think I'm blessed with a very good neighbor. So if I can get some help from people in Lymon, I think it would take two, maybe one, to help me string this up. It would be very much appreciated. And if we have time now, I'd like to give a quick synopsis on D-Star. It's a digital mode. It's not DMR, what the club is getting into, but it's another mode.
Yeah, and after you tell us your impression of D-Star, if Eric is still available, I'm pretty sure he was involved in the recent voting that took place on this club, Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club, on the meeting of this week. They did vote to establish a DMR system. And I'm going to ask Eric right after you, Rich, to give us a few words as to what it is. When you look at the latest issue of the repeater guide, you'll see the number of DMR repeaters that are scattered around the United States. And right now, I'm not quite sure what the difference is. I've heard some comments. Tell us your impression of D-Star, Rich. N2EO, K2LIW.
JF on frequency.
Hey, Dick. Now there's somebody else in there. Well, I guess you can pick him up. What do you call? D-Star is a proprietary system by ICOM. You gotta buy an ICOM radio. The repeaters are ICOM. What I like about D-Star and probably also DMR, there's no funny business. It's hard to jam it because you have to register as a D-Star user, and when you key a D-Star repeater, all you do is press the mic button, and anybody looking and the system knows exactly your call letters and who you are. Very, very nice. I bought a radio. It's an ID, not an IC, an ID 880. It was about $450. I'm on it now. It does FM and D-Star. And I just going to order tomorrow a programming cable. Software by RT Systems so I can program it much easier. But it's a very, very nice mode. I was into it about 10 years ago and now I'm getting back into it. It's still not as popular as FM, but it's grown by leaps and bounds. I got a worldwide. Once you enter a gateway, you can go all over the world. Back to that and to the other.
I thank you for that, Rich. There was a person who said on frequency. Please give me your full call letters, your name, and then proceed with your question or comment, sir. Mr. On Frequency, go right ahead. K2LIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
This is Vito in Bayshore, WA2PJF on frequency.
Okay, I should have recognized your voice, Vito. You keep the mic a little bit slow. a little bit late from the time you were talking, and I only heard the on frequency. Go right ahead, Vito.
Okay, I hope I have permitted. I have a question that's a new problem here in the radio room. Can I address that problem at this time, or is there somebody ahead of me waiting to be go first? Go ahead.
Yeah, there are two people ahead of you, Vito. And so we got to handle them in order, if you know what I mean. You're opening up a new subject. But I hope you can hang in there, and we'll certainly get to you. Vito, by the way, is the man you want to talk to when it comes to what you can buy and what services there are at Home Depot. He's one of those guys that are very conscientious, and he visits all of their educational programs, if you know what I mean. And when it comes to code safety, electrical wiring and things like that, and plumbing, Vito's the man you want to talk to. All right, the next person that was on the list is Barry, N2 Moonbounce, who's got a question or a comment. Go right ahead, Barry. N2MB, K2RIW, and the TechNet.
Okay, I have a feeling Vito can answer this question, because I think it's right up his alley, actually. I have these compact fluorescent lights, you know, the circular, the swivelly ones. They look like a big corkscrew. And one of the rooms recently, it was on, and I came into the room later, and it was off. So I said, oh my, I guess it's gone then. So I unscrewed it, and I put a new one in, but I moved it to another room. It didn't come on. When I moved it to the other room, it did not come on. But I neglected to shut the switch off. An hour later, I came into the room and said, who left the light on? The son of a gun came back on again. It's working perfectly. I'm really curious about that. Maybe Vito can straighten me out on that. N2MB.
The ballast built in the base. And the ballast is, supplies the voltage to ignite the phosphor on the envelope, which is the glass, through the mercury and the argon. And then it also limits the current flow so that it won't take off and destroy itself. That's what a ballast does. However, they are temperamental. I make jokes about these bulbs in the store to the customers. I say the majority of these bulbs are female, so they're very temperamental. What you've experienced is the bulb is having its moments. Now, they say that these lamps, let me drop. They, meaning the vendor, the manufacturer, have a life of X amount of years, 7 years, 6 years, whatever, based upon 2 hours or 3 hours of daily operation, not a full day. Also, I did discover that in the earlier models, and it may still carry over to the ones we have presently, the location, the position of operation upside down, for example, they tend to burn out more readily. They were the earlier models. We had one that lasted 4 hours and it died, inverted. Vibration has an effect, although there's no filaments involved, it does have an effect. The ballasts have these little thermocouples inside that open and shut, that cool them down to give them more life and more time. There are many, many variables. What I would do, really, is just bring the lamp back with or without a receipt. If you bought in the Bayshore store, I'll take it back from you. And get a brand new one. Now, real quick here, the new ones that are coming out within the last couple of weeks are now instant start, complete new situation with the ballast. They're not preheat. So that makes a big difference, and we've been having a lot of good luck with those. Back to you.
Okay, I will probably show up in the Bayshore store because I do not have the receipt anymore. I have no idea where it is. But you're right, Vito. It's upside down. It's screwed into the ceiling. It's not screwed into a lamp socket. So that may have something to do with it. Very good. I'm getting an education here.
Replace it with an LED bulb. They're getting substituted
there. Yes, the light emitting diodes are a better way to go than the fluorescence. And remember, this Kelvin temperatures play an important part. That's